Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the cover story when we come back. The lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of our two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. This school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the scene of the alleged crime and what you should say to the police or investigators and what you ought not to say. And you'll learn how to conduct yourself and your case at bail setting, arraignment, pleadings, motion hearings, trial, and appeal. And you'll learn how to ask questions, cross-examine adverse witnesses, select a jury, introduce exhibits and evidence, conduct discovery, do legal research, and follow the rules of court. Now, there are 28 things to learn, 28 elements in courtroom strategy and procedure. And rule one is that all of the evidence that your opponent is ever going to use against you is going to be furnished by you. So keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything and then shut up. Now, after rule one's out of the way, we can get to the real business of winning your case. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. That number again, 417-273-4967. Doesn't cost anything. That's the place to start. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc. That's for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there on the archives page. Hey, last time I was running out of time, and I didn't have time to get into any more detail as we were talking about this thing of the sun. The sun was shrinking, remember? And there's a strategy that's used by philosophers. It's the cover story. That's right, the good old cover story. Evolutionary philosophy has a cover story, and the cover story is science. Every time evolutionary philosophy comes up and says man evolved from green algae or the universe was created by the Big Bang, they always put in the word science. Science, 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 science. They never fail. As if the backbone of evolutionary philosophy is science, and that science demonstrates and proves the theory of evolution, which it does not, improves the exact opposite. But nobody ever checks the cover story. Nobody ever does the math. We just believe what they tell us. And then the religious guys over here, who are the main subjects or the main objects of the ridicule that comes out of evolutionary philosophy, those jerks are so dumb, they can't even read the Bible and come up with the biblical equivalent or the answer to it. Talk about blind leading the blind, huh? Now, remember in the last program, I said the sun is 750,000 miles in diameter. And it is burning up. And it's burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Now, I don't know that. See, I'm just Joe Sixpack out here. I don't have any equipment to measure the rate at which the sun is burning up, but I pay my taxes, and God bless taxes, because by paying my taxes, the United States government gives out grants to people, you know, to keep them working, to keep them off the streets and out of the pool halls and out of the whorehouses. So they got these guys called scientists that are trained and real smart, got degrees after their names. And these people have telescopes and instruments and laboratories and all of the equipment, you know, and observatories on top of big mountains, paid for, of course, by taxpayers like you and me. And so for over 100 years, these people have been looking at the sun and taking pictures of it and measuring it and weighing it and dicking around with it. And so they came up with a number. Now listen to this. The sun is shrinking. I didn't write that. Don't get mad at me now and say, "Why, you lying sack of so-and-so, the sun is not shrinking." How in the hell do you know it ain't shrinking? Science says it is. Oh, wait a minute. Let me tell you where I got this. That was a Newswire report on March 23rd, 1980, and reported in your Sunday supplement of your newspaper. Now, if you can't believe the Sunday supplement of your newspaper, who can you believe? Now, again, I didn't write this. I'm just reporting what the newspaper, which is a part of journalism, isn't it? And I talked to you a little bit about journalism here the other day. We're talking about John Swinton said you couldn't believe anything those guys are telling you. They've got an agenda. But, you know, you and I, we don't know, so we're just listening, aren't we? I'm just taking the numbers as these guys give them to me, and they say science has been looking at the sun. I don't doubt that they have been. And for 100 years, they've been taking measurements, and they've come to a conclusion. It's burning up. That makes sense when you strike a match and you just sit there and watch it burn. Pretty soon it burns down to your fingers. And if you don't let go of it, it'll burn you. But it burns the matchstick up, doesn't it? So it doesn't burn forever. It burns until it consumes the wood on the match, the matchstick. So here's the conclusion they came up to. They said the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. So they look at it for 100 years and they say, "Oh my God, it has shrunk by 0.1%." So the scientists have been watching this for more than 100 years, and the evidence is now conclusive that every hour the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. All right, so I don't know if it's 5 feet or 10 feet or no feet or what feet, but they tell me, reporting through the newspaper, "Hey, we're scientists. This is science now. You can believe this." And the sun is shrinking by 5 feet an hour. Let's take their numbers. I won't argue with them. They tell me it's burning 5 feet an hour. So I say, okay, so I take my paper. Why don't you do this? Get your Sharp EL1197 G3 out. It's like I did. Then go get yourself a yellow pad, just like I do. Get yourself a pen here, and let's do the arithmetic. Let's just do the arithmetic the way these guys did. Let's check their numbers and see if the story they're telling us checks out. Nobody ever does that. Billy Graham stands up with the Bible, and he says, "The Bible says..." He never cites, but then when you look in the Bible, you know, take a concordance and you look up his subject matter, and then you check him out, you find the Bible does not say that at all. It says the exact opposite. Check it. Next time you listen to one of these televangelists, go check it out yourself in the Bible, and you'll see he's lying to you. And I don't know why. You don't need to. I mean, you could just make the citation, you know, and go from there, but they don't. Now, I'm not arguing with science here. Science means knowledge. Look it up in the dictionary and it says it means knowledge. I'm not arguing with knowledge. I presume that the knowledge that we have discovered here by watching the sun for 100 years and paying these guys to do that for us has now produced fruit. We now know that the sun is burning up, and it's burning up at the rate of 5 feet per hour. I don't know that we needed to know that in order to make a living and pay the rent, but, you know, hell, we got to pay the rent anyway, and might as well know that the sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. So now we know. God love them. So I went to the encyclopedia, and I said, "Well, gee, how big is the sun?" Well, it's about 750,000 square miles. It's not exactly. They got 757,487.2249,7762 miles. 750,000, round numbers, is close enough. It's a fur piece. It's a big piece of real estate. It's a lot bigger than the Earth. 750,000 miles in diameter. That's, if you were to bore a hole on one side of it and just keep going, you'd have to travel 750,000 miles to come out the other side. All right, now it's burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. So there's 5,280 feet in a mile. So I divided 5,280 feet into 750,000 miles. And what I did was I actually multiplied it. So if you plug in 750,000 miles in diameter times 5,280 feet, because that's how many feet there is in a mile, that'll tell you how many feet it is from one side of the sun to the other. Boy, that's a big number. It's 3,960,000,000 feet. So we'd have to bore through there 3,960,000,000 feet to get from one side of the sun to the other. Okay. Now, it's burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. 5 feet per hour. So I divided 5 feet per hour into 3,960,000,000 feet, and it told me that there was 792,000,000 hours to get this job done. Got that? 792,000,000 hours the sun is going to burn up. It's going to burn out. It's going to go out. The match is going to cease to shine. So if you want to know how long is the sun going to burn, it's 792,000,000 hours. So I didn't know exactly how long that was, so I divided it by 24 hours in a day. So if you divide 24 hours into 792,000,000 hours, that gives you 33 million days. So in 33 million days, the sun's going to burn out. I wasn't quite sure how long 33 million days was, so I divided it by 365 days in a year. And it came up to 90,410 years. Got that? You want to know how long we've got here on planet Earth? The answer is 90,410 years. That's it. It's over. Okay, now I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, thank God for science, because they now told us how fast the sun's burning up. Then I got to thinking, and then remember I told you, do you know how long it was, you know, in the past when the dinosaurs died out, when that big asteroid hit the Yucatan Peninsula and wiped out all the dinosaurs? Do you remember? That was 65 million years ago. 65 million years. Now, let's do a little bit more arithmetic here. If the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. A millennium is 1,000 years. So in 1,000 years, the sun is burning up by 1%. Okay? So if the sun existed just 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. Okay, so now we know that the sun is 750,000 miles in diameter today. So, just using science now, and we're gonna stick in a little bit of evolutionary philosophy here. Remember, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people that believe them don't even know who originated those ideas. But it was from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood have been strictly ruled out. And this is called science. Okay, so let's apply it. First of all, we don't know 100,000 years ago whether the sun was burning 10 feet an hour or 50 feet an hour. It could have been burning a lot faster. Or maybe 1 million or 5 million years ago, it was burning a lot slower, maybe only 1 foot per hour. I don't know, and you don't know, and neither does anybody else know how fast it was burning 1 million years ago. We just know how fast it's burning today and has been over the last 100 years. And so Lyle comes along and he says, now, this miracle crap that you get in the Bible, like God created the sun and the moon and the stars, is nonsense. He says that what you're looking at today is what's always been going on.
Well, okay.
Let's take it at face value. That's what he says. So let's just apply the numbers to it. If that's true, if Lyle's theory is true, well, then, what's going on today has been going on for millions and millions and billions of years. That's what their theory calls for. That's not science, that's speculation. But it's their speculation, and they're calling that science. They don't know that. You cannot take that into the laboratory and demonstrate it. You can't document it today. What we can document today is that the sun's burning up at 5 feet an hour. Well, at least that's what the scientists reported to us. And we presume they're not lying. You know, I guess they're telling me the truth. So I'm going to take their numbers, and then I run them through, and I say, okay, in 90,410 years, the sun is going to burn out. Now, I don't know if the sun, as it's getting smaller, burns up faster or slower. I don't know. I don't think anybody else does either. I mean, by the time it gets down to 10% of its present size, will it still be burning 5 feet an hour? Or maybe it'll be burning 50 feet an hour by that time. See, I don't know. I do know that if you strike a match and you hold it straight up, it won't burn the stick and the fire will go out. If you hold it level, it'll burn a lot slower than if you stand it on end and let the fire come up the match. So depending upon how you hold the match, we'll tell you and show you and demonstrate to you how fast this thing can burn. I don't think we've tested that, but, you know, taking their numbers and running with them, 1% per millennium, if the sun existed 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. That would be 1.5 miles, wouldn't it? 750. And 750, well, 50 and 50 would be 100, and 250 and 250 would be a half. That'd be 150,000 miles in diameter. Or 750 would be 1,500,000 miles in diameter. All right, so it's going to be twice as big in 100,000 years. Well, then, in 200,000 years, it would be twice as big in 400,000 years and so on down the line, wouldn't it? So, we go back 20 million years, and in 20 million years, then the diameter would be 93 million miles in diameter. Well, now, if that sucker was 93 million miles in diameter, less than 65 million years ago, which is when the dinosaurs died out, see? Now, you see, you've got these scientists over here that tell us when the dinosaurs died out. They don't know. They weren't there. They're guessing. But they call that science, and that's the cover story, remember? If they tell you that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago, and you say, how do you know that? Science tells us that. Science is like God. See, years ago, people used to say their cover story, you know, the Christians, the religious guys, their cover story was, the Bible says so, and that's the last word. And so the rational people, the rationalists, they said, well, just because the Bible says so doesn't make it the last word, because we've been checking around and checking the numbers, and our conclusion is that the Bible is an error. That's what they told us. And so they came up with their own theory, and they said, well, the world's always been here, and the Big Bang is the way it got started, and so now these same scientists say, you know, we can depend on this because we've got uniformitarianism is the basis for our scientific theory. And so using uniformitarianism, we go back here by measuring the rate at which the sun is burning up. And guess what? It tells us that 20 million years ago, the sun would have been 93 million miles in diameter. And 93 million miles is the distance from here to the sun. So the sun, then, is going to be 93 million miles in diameter 20 million years ago, and the Earth is going to be right where it is today, isn't it? That's what uniformitarianism tells us. Now, boys and girls, we don't have to be rocket scientists to see that these numbers, if they're true, and we're going to presume they are because that's what they're telling us, when we add them up, the Earth would have been incinerated on the surface of the Sun 20 million years ago when the Sun was 93 million miles in diameter, burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Therefore, the dinosaurs were burned up on the edge of the Sun. They didn't die 65 million years ago because the Earth wasn't even here 65 million years ago. Couldn't have been. Now somebody's going to say, well, that Newswire report 1980 was a mistake. Well, okay. Okay, we'll buy that. It was a mistake. But it's a scientific report that went out to millions of people all over the country. And if it was in error in 1980, then why should we believe anything we read in our newspapers or our slick books? Which is what I mentioned to you the other day. I said, can you point to a science book 150 or 200 years ago that's still in use today? There aren't any. And so every 10 years or 15 or 20 years, we have to reevaluate and rewrite our science books to incorporate all of the new knowledge that we've acquired and to expunge all of the false information that we taught to the last generation. Every last generation has all of this false information that's been funneled into their brains. And that's why I brought up the subject matter of the cover story. Why would we want to believe the cover story when it's wrong every 20 years and has to be rewritten? Now, here's another little piece of information here. Let's take a look at this one. There's a place called Niagara Falls. And Niagara Falls, I didn't know this until I just read it the other day, but Niagara Falls is that water is coming over the crest and dropping down. At the bottom of the falls, there's a big rubble field down there. You know, you look over the edge from the observation platform, and there's all these boulders and rocks down there. Well, those boulders and rocks came from up on the face of the falls. You see, what's going on there is the water, as it runs over, is wearing the face of the falls back. And then here's another kicker. It wears it back at a rate that is measurable. You can measure it every year. I think it's about 3 feet a year. Now listen to this. Niagara Falls, the famous waterfall, is a magnificent example of a geologic clock that reveals a very young Earth, because the rim of the falls is wearing back at a known rate every year. Geologists recognize that this has only taken 5,000 years to erode from its original precipice. Yeah, that's all you got to do here is you take a look at it, and they've been measuring this thing for years and years, and they say, okay, it's wearing back at a certain rate every year. So they went out here to where the original precipice was. You know, just go straight ahead, you know, straightforward. And you get out here straightforward and say, well, here's where the original precipice was, and it's been wearing back, well, according to uniformitarian. Now, if there was an earthquake, if there was some kind of a big event that would have changed that, then that's called catastrophism. Now, the Bible tells us that there were catastrophes in the past. But these philosophers today say, no catastrophes. Everything's uniform. Everything that you see going on today has been going on just like that for billions and billions. Billions of years. Well, you know, small guys like us, you know, feeding on the bottom of the pond, you know, we have to rely upon what these guys tell us. And then when they give us this information, you know, if we believe their cover story, then we will believe evolutionary philosophy. But if we do the arithmetic, pretty soon it tells us, uh-oh, we must have had a catastrophe here some years back. Or we must have had some kind of special intervention. Somebody, whether you call him God or First Cause or Buddha or hang a label on your First Cause, somebody had to create all this mass and matter that we see in the universe. Now, the evolutionists tell us, no. Science tells us. Science. Okay, so there are scientists out there, and they're called astrophysicists, and they've got degrees after their names. They're real smart guys, you know. Been to college, you know, and then they go out here at night and they look through the telescope and they're taking pictures and they're doing all these thingies, and those guys are real scientists. Now, when you go back here and you want to come to a conclusion, you say, well, how did all this mass and matter get here? Well, none of us living today were there when it was created. Now, this creation thing over here, that's another story. I think we ought to take a look at that, because, you see, the evolution guys over here say that the laws of thermodynamics don't work. That's just nonsense. Excuse me, when I went to school, they told me that there's been no past eternity of matter, that matter hasn't always existed, that matter is running down. Matter is going out of existence, but it isn't coming into existence. It's changing, but there's no new matter. That's what I learned. I don't know about you. But, no, that's not true. Come to find out, the evolutionists said, no, we got a Big Bang. Now, here's the way this Big Bang works. This is what I've been reading. This is what they're telling me. They say, at one time, way, way back, long ago and far away, there was a dot at the end of this sentence. So if you've got a pen in your hand, put a dot at the end of the sentence. Have you got your dot there? Okay. Now imagine the world, the Earth, right here. The Earth was compacted down into the size of that dot. Can you visualize that? That isn't true, because I'm telling you that. I'm just telling you that because that's what you learned in school, wasn't it? It's what I learned in school. They said there's a lot of space between the atoms, between the electrons, you know, in atoms. And if you took all that space out, you could compact that down. It would be very, very tiny. It'd be very, very heavy, but very, very tiny. All right. Now, can you see that dot at the end of your sentence there? All right. Now, picture the entire solar system, you know, the sun, our moons, all the moons of Jupiter and Uranus and Venus and Mars and Neptune and all the planets, nine planets, all of those are compacted down into that little dot at the end of your sentence. Can you imagine that? That's what they're telling us. All right, now. And they tell us this is science now. And always remember, we've got science here. That's our cover story. This is science telling us this. Now, imagine the entirety of the Milky Way galaxy. That's a fur piece across. That's 100 million miles across. I think it's 100 million. It's either 100 million or 100 billion. I think it's 100 million miles across. And they tell us it contains billions of stars, which contain many billions of planets circling around those stars, and many billions more moons circling around those planets. Now take all of that in the Milky Way galaxy and compact all of that down into our little dot at the end of the sentence. Can you imagine that? This is what evolutionary philosophy is telling us. This is science. But God help you now if you argue with science. But it gets better than that. Now that the Hubble telescope is out there, they tell us there's around 2 trillion of these galaxies. 2 trillion Milky Way galaxies. There's black holes and quasars and galaxies and all kinds of neat stuff out there. Now take all of that, 2 trillion galaxies, and compress all of that down into our little dot. Got that? Can you imagine that? All gets compressed down into the little dot. One dot. and they're telling us that all of the space that's around all of these nuclei in all of these atoms, if you took all of those out, all that space out, and compressed it all down, it would fit right into that dot, all 2 trillion of those galaxies. Now, they tell us that they've just did an upgrade on this Hubble, and they tell us that today we can look out into space 12 billion light years. Way, way, way longer than the 3 or 4 billion years that they used to tell us in school. See, when I went to school, everything was 2 billion years old, then it got to 4 billion, then it got to 16 billion. Okay, well, now they're telling us we can look out there 12 billion. Now, they tell us what the new upgrades are going to be able to look out 25 billion light years. Now, there's an exponential factor that goes along with this because we're looking out here in a circle. We're actually looking out in a sphere. And so when you go out a mile, you know, it gets so big, but then when you go out 2 miles, it isn't twice as big, it's 10 times bigger. And then you go out another mile and it's not 10 times bigger, it's 100 times bigger, and so on. They're going to go out here another 12 billion light years. And all the mass and matter that they encounter going out there into that realm or into that space, all of that fits into our little dot. We don't even know how big that is, but it's a fur piece, as I say down here in the Ozarks. A fur piece. All right, now all of that is all compacted into our little dot, which made our little dot unstable. Yeah, the little dot became unstable, and it blew up. That's the Big Bang. It blew up, and it expanded out for 25 billion years, 12 billion that we can see. That's a long time, 12 billion years. And it has been expanding out over all that time. And pretty soon it's going to reach as far as it's going to go. Then it's all going to collapse in on itself again. And then it'll compact down into this little dot. And then it'll blow up again. When I was a kid, they called this the pulsing or pulsating universe theory? These guys come up with all kinds of theories. And they're certainly entitled to their opinions. But you see, they don't label these as opinions. They label these science. You believe this, son. It's like religion. You know, when you go to church, they don't tell you a story and then ask you, what do you think of that? They tell you a story and say, if you don't believe that, you're going to hell. In science, if you don't believe this, you're going to be expelled. You're going to get an F on your finals, and you're not going to graduate from college. So you better have the right answers on there on Friday. Can you believe this stuff? Okay. Well, you can believe it because it's science. Now, here's the problem with this. There's a thing here called thermodynamics, and no discovery of true science takes God by surprise, and we should expect that. And in his wisdom, there would be hints of these truths found in the scripture. Now, the first law speaks of a total creation originally completed and now sustained by God's power. The second law speaks of the curse of decay and death brought on by man's sin and causing an overall degeneration in everything. Now, when we look at the scientific wording of the first law, it's called energy is conserved. And all existing processes of nature merely change energy from one form to another. In nature, energy is neither created nor destroyed. Matter itself, which is potential atomic energy, is maintained at a constant level. Processes change matter and energy from one form to another, but the total quantity of energy in the universe always remains the same. Second law, energy dissipates. As processes in nature occur, the total energy reservoir is reduced to simpler forms, with a consequent increase in what has been termed entropy. As energy is used, it becomes less available for further use. Part of the energy spent to produce something is always lost by radiation, friction, or other effects. It becomes non-recoverable heat dissipating in space. Ultimately, as things are going, the entire universe will end up being filled with a stagnant mass of low-level heat energy. When the match goes out, when it's completely burned, you've got something less than you started with. You've got the ash, you've got the head that's still there, but the heat energy is gone. Where'd it go? Well, it didn't disappear, it's still there. Now, here's what these guys are telling us. They're telling us that all of this was contained in this little dot at the end of our sentence. Now, here's our question. Where'd it come from to start with? You see, these guys start with mass and matter. And our question as it relates to the origin of things is, where did this mass and matter come from? And they say it came from this dot at the end of the sentence. They tell you that all of the mass and matter in the universe has always existed, albeit in a very tiny dot at the end of the sentence. But science tells us that energy has not always existed, that energy came into existence at some point in time, mass and matter came into existence at some point in time, and they call this the Big Bang. And I'm sitting here saying, wait a minute, this is an oxymoron. You're starting with mass and matter, and it's always existed, which the first law of thermodynamics says, nope, that isn't the way that works. So here are the scientists and the evolutionists. I don't know if they're working in the same camp or not. On the one hand, they tell us mass and matter has not always existed. And on the other hand, they tell us, yes, it's always existed, but it's always been in the form of this little dot down here. And if it isn't the little dot, then it's out here in the mass and matter. And then when it comes back down to the little dot, there it is. But it's always existed. Now, in the Bible, God comes along and said, there was a time when there wasn't any mass or matter, and I came on the scene and I created it. And the smart guys with college degrees say, well, we don't believe that. We know it hasn't always existed, but what we do believe is that it always existed in the form of a little dot at the end of the sentence. Now, you mull that one over in your brain for a minute while I give you this report. At the midway point here, to satisfy the FCC in all these countries around the world, we have to tell you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing or recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the cover story. Now, the cover story, remember, is a lie. It's just hypocrisy. But we all have to have a cover story to tell people in case they call our bluff and they say, well, how does that work or why does that work that way? In evolution, they say, well, science tells us. And that's the last word. In religion, God says, and that's the last word. And when we're dealing with law, you know, it's like antique firearms we were talking about earlier. Antique firearms, those are not regulated and controlled, but nobody at the BATF wants to tell you that. Their cover story is, it's the law. That's what they tell you when there's vaccination time or there's census. It's the law. But when we look into vaccination, we find out, oh no, there's exceptions to that. Oh no, there's exceptions to the census. Oh no, there's exceptions here in the firearms laws. You know, it's what we call butseps. There's butseps involved here. So when we look at Niagara Falls, and this thing is wearing back at a certain rate, if then we were to simply carry it in the other direction, you know, if we carry this back, and if it's wearing away at 3 feet a year, let's try this. 5,280 feet divided by 3, that's 3 feet a year, it would wear back 1,760 feet in 5,000 years. Is that about right? Let me try that one again. See if I'm on the right wavelength here. If you got 5,280 feet, and The number that they're using here is 5,000 years ago is where the precipice was, and it's been eroding back. So if 5,000 years ago, and it was eroding back at the rate of 3 feet per year, then it's eroded back 1,700 feet, hasn't it? So if you go out there 1,700 feet, that's where it was at the original precipice. If we were to carry that forward 3 feet a year and just carry it out for 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, 10 million years, why, that river would have been sitting out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean after it crossed California, wouldn't it? And I don't come up with all these numbers. I'm just suggesting to you that maybe we ought to do the arithmetic ourselves and ask ourselves, is this some kind of a cover story? Now, it makes more sense if about 3,500 years ago we had a big flood. That's a catastrophe. And I could see a worldwide flood leaving the world in a position where the Niagara River was falling over a precipice, and then 5,000, or it's actually a little less than that, it's 2369 is when the flood occurred, according to the chronology that we see in the scripture, 2369 BC. So if we were to follow that chronology back from 2369, and if 3 feet a year is fairly constant, I can't tell you that it is or that it isn't. That's a number that I heard somebody bandy about. And they say there's guys that are watching that every year, and they're measuring it, you know. They've got their laser transits out there, and they're measuring it. And there's a big rubble pile down there in front of it. So it looks like to me that it's probably been out there, you know, sticking out there about 1,700 feet. 1,700 feet, that's a quarter of a mile, a little over, you know. 1,300 feet be a quarter of a mile, so 1,700 feet is a little over a quarter of a mile, and it's wore back that far, you know. But if it's been there millions of years, well, then add 3 feet a year to it. Let's just try that. 1 million years. I'll plug that in here. Let's divide that by 3 feet a year, and that'll tell us it would have been sticking out there another 333,333 feet. Wouldn't it? You know, if we go 2 million years, 5 million years, 10 million years, and we just keep adding on to that, you know, that thing was sticking out there a long ways. Well, pretty soon that takes you over to Indiana, Illinois, you know, Iowa. No, the topography has changed, all right, but how long did it take it to change? Millions of years? Or did it happen in 1 year when we had a flood? I mean, it's up to you. You can believe what you want. But when you do the numbers here, these numbers don't add. That's what the bottom line to that is. All right, enough of that. Let's see what else we got over here. I'll circle off the Big Bang over here. That's kind of a crazy story. The sun is shrinking. I'll take that one, write it off. Have you ever thought about interest and interest rates? In the Bible, there's a story and it tells you, in fact, there's 23 places that the word usury appears in the scripture. And it tells you don't practice usury. Well, I got to thinking about that and I said, you know, every time we go to buy something, they want to charge us interest. You buy a house, they want you to pay interest. We're talking about a housing meltdown, and they're lowering interest rates. I see the interest rates now are about less than 5%. They're 4.62% or 4.57% or something like that. And so the interest rates keep going down. I can remember years ago, the interest rates used to be out around, 8%, you know. And then there was a period when the interest rates went up to 21% back during the late 70s and early 80s. You remember that? You couldn't buy a house. Who in the hell could pay 21% interest? But you've got credit cards today, boys and girls, and these credit cards, they have some pretty steep interest rates on them. They start out and they say, well, we'll give you this credit card without any interest rate for 6 months. Then you've got this thing for 6 months, and now you're in debt, and you got to keep making the payments. And then they say to you, well, we're going to raise your interest rate to 15%, and then you miss a payment. And then the next thing you know, your interest rate is 28%. Well, there's a mathematical formula here called the Rule of 72. I don't know who thunk this up, but somebody did, and they pointed it out to me, and it works. And so I said, well, I guess I can use that, the Rule of 72. Let's test this and see where we're at. Let's suppose that you've got a credit card, and you're paying 28% interest. That's the maximum, you know, maximum number. And 28% interest is divided into 72. So we take 72 divided by 28, and then we get a number. It's 2.57. You know what that means? That means that the debt, whatever the number of the debt is, $10,000, $2,000, $200, in 2.57 years, that interest rate compounded, just simple compounding once a year, is going to move you up to 2.5 times. It'll just take 2.5 years to double the amount of the principal that you owe. Isn't that special? Yeah. Now, that's a mathematical certainty. And there's something even better about that. The math involved with that shows you that it's unsustainable. And that's what reminded me of Social Security, because in this election cycle, there's candidates that are saying, Social Security is safe on my watch. They'll never tamper with Social Security on my watch. And we'll never change Social Security on my watch. And then they accuse the other guy over there, well, he wants to change Social Security. Why, he wants to take your Social Security away from you. Well, I took a look at this about, I don't know, 30 years ago. I was just a kid, probably 25 years old, maybe. No, it's longer than that. It was 1965. 65, 75, 85, 95, 105 is 45 years ago. 45 years ago. God, time flies when you're having fun. 1965. Then I was paying in the maximum rate of Social Security. It wasn't very much, you know, 3, 4, 5%, something like that. So if I made $10,000, I'd take 5% of it, pay it into Social Security. So I got to thinking about that, and I said, now, if I took that same amount of money, and I put it into a savings account at 5% interest, which is what they were paying in the savings and loans in those days. That's about what the interest rate was on buying U.S. government bonds, about 5%. I said, how much money would I have when I got ready to retire at age 65? And the answer was $400,000, which, you know, back in the 60s was a bunch of money. So I got to thinking about that, and I said, wow, that's pretty good. How much am I going to get from Social Security? So I took a look at the numbers, and I said, oh, my God, that's chicken feed. By comparison, it's chicken feed. So I said to myself, I'd like to opt out of Social Security. And somebody said, you can't. It's the law. You have to pay into Social Security. And I said to myself, but Social Security is unsustainable. Why is it unsustainable? Well, do the arithmetic. When Social Security started back in 1935, that's when they passed the act. In 1940, they started taking a 0.5% from the employee, 0.5% from the employer, that's 1%. So the tax was 1%. They put it in a fund, and in 1940, they started paying it out. And in 1940, 80 people were paying into the fund for every one person that's drawn out. Well, okay, that's pretty good. 5 years later, the number dropped to 45-1. So that's good. There's 45 people paying in for everybody drawn out. By 1957, it was 16-1. That's not bad. 16 people are paying in, and one guy is drawn out. By 1987, it was 3 point something, not a little less than 4. 4 people were paying in for every one person drawing out. Today, the number is something like 2.8, I think I saw the other day. It's on its way to 1-1 by 2020. 10 years from now, for every one person paying into Social Security, there will be one person drawing out. Hey, what's that tell you? It's unsustainable because as you progress further into the future, there are fewer workers coming into the workplace and more workers that are retiring. Remember, we've lowered our birth rate. We wanted to stop this overpopulation of the world, remember? All right, so in the process of doing that, and all of the industrialized countries of the world are facing this problem. Italy, Japan, Germany, Great Britain, the United States, Canada, all of the countries are facing this. You've got fewer people coming into the workplace and more people drawing their social benefits. And that's why it has dropped from 80-1 down to 1-1 in the not-too-distant future. Now, at some point in time, it will double in the opposite direction. There will be one person paying in and two people drawing out. And then there will be one person paying in, and then there will be 4 people drawing out. Then there will be one person paying in and 8 people drawing out. Now, I don't know when the thing's going to collapse and go out of business. It hasn't yet. But at some point in time, it is. And that's because it isn't self-sustaining. It is unsustainable. And those are the numbers. I didn't make it that way. I'm just reporting it to you. Now, George Bush, I would say to his credit, back in the early days of his first administration, said, "We need to change Social Security." I don't know if his proposal made a lot of sense, but he said, "We got to do something to change it." And so the other side comes back and says, "Not on my watch. We're not going to let you do that." Well, okay. Well, then why don't you do it? Let the Democrats do it. And they're sitting there saying, "Well, no, we're not going to change that. We're going to keep it the way it is. It's unsustainable, and we're not going to change it." The other guy says, "It's unsustainable. We need to change it." And the other side says, "Like hell you are." So what's that tell you? So years ago, I looked at that and I said, "Well, since I can see that it's mathematically unsustainable, I think I want to get the hell out." Now, the cover story is that Social Security is solvent and that it's safe and that it's been there for all these years and it will always be there. Now, go out and ask Americans. You know, the average Joe Sixpack American, he doesn't believe that it's going to be there when he retires. Well, let me ask you this. If you don't think that thing's going to be there when you retire, why are you still paying into it? It's the law. Isn't that what they tell you? Hey, it's the law. You got to pay into it. You're working at General Motors. By God, they're just going to take it out. But you're not going to get it. Well, now, let's think about how much we're paying in, because it's 16.1%, or 15.3% if you're self-employed. We just round it off to 15, you know, for everybody. Somebody's going to say, well, your employer pays 9%. No, he doesn't. Your employer doesn't pay a penny. Never did, doesn't now, never will. He's just jacking up the prices to his customers over here and collecting the tax and paying it over for you. You should be collecting that in your paycheck every Friday, but you're not. It's being collected by the government and saved for you, and you're not going to collect it. So you're working for it. It's your labor that produces it. Always remember that. It's your labor that produces it. Who writes the check and sends it in is irrelevant. It's your labor that produced it. And you're not getting it. You're not getting it today, and you ain't getting it tomorrow either. But you're going to pay it in. And so the guys that are collecting all of this now are today's beneficiaries. They're going to collect theirs for a few more years until the economy collapses, and then it's anybody's guess. I think the government's going to pay you every dollar they owe you. But I don't think that the dollars they pay you are going to buy anything. So it works out the same way. They'll pay you $1 billion, but it won't buy anything. So there you are. That's what hyperinflation does. Well, the moral to the story then is that it's unsustainable. It isn't going to last forever. You're paying into it. You can't get out of it. And you're not going to get anything in the future. Don't you think that if you had that 16%, that you could do something more intelligent and more constructive with it? Now, your government's also taking 17%. That's at the low end now. 17 and 16 is 33. So if you're paying 33% for the income tax and Social Security, that's a third of everything you create and produce, isn't it? A third of everything that we create and produce is going to these two taxes. And what do we get for it? Nothing. Oh, if you thought bailing the banks out was a good buy, stick with the program. But hell, they're not even using your tax dollars to do that. They're using your tax dollars up, and then they haven't got enough money, so they just go create it. It's called quantitative easing, so they can put you in further debt at interest, which doubles every so many years, which we'll take a look at tomorrow when we come back. Meanwhile, I'm out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.